The tooth was missing, and that was never a pleasant thing. It was going on 30 minutes that Rye and Sarah had been after it. When the tiny white kernel had shaken loose from her mouth, Sarah had been staring up at the sky, something she did these days with escalating frequency. The brilliance of the cloudless blue seemed not to faze her, nor did the nip of the heavy and sluggish mosquitoes. She would go blind that way, and Rye knew that was bad. Also bad, though, was the unhappy notion that this flat, dull stretch of moribund farmland contained a realm of fascination that in all his years he'd been either unwilling or unable to notice. What she was looking for were meteors. According to the radio, Sarah was a good 8 or 9 hours early, but none of the estimates had addressed whether or not you could see meteors during the day. Sarah was just covering her bases. Most kids her age had long forgotten their teachers' reminders of this celestial event from back in June, because those reminders had carried the unpleasant whiff of homework. Not Sarah. She had stayed up late in April to see the luminous trains of dust cast from the Lyrids. She'd had a fit when a July thunderstorm had robbed her of watching the Delta Aquariids. And 2 weeks ago, she had noted all 34 Perseids she'd seen by making hatch marks in a spiral-bound notebook. But the passing of the Jekyll Belt was the big one, a cosmic event so rare she'd not witness it again until she was an unimaginable 44 years old. To be safe, she'd started craning her neck days ago. She was well aware that trusting the estimates of small-town school teachers and radio personalities was risky. Interrupting this rigorous scientific observation was an event less rare but almost as exciting, the falling of a baby tooth. The cuspid had dropped while Rye had been busy uprooting the rusted cardan shaft of a long-dead baler from the dirt, and who knows how long Sarah had gone before noticing the line of pink blood that crept down her neck. It was only when Rye barreled the soft beam of metal into the drainage ditch and whooped in victory did his sister come alive. She touched the blood and showed it to him. Rye wasn't dumb enough to think that his sister believed in the tooth fairy. Rather, she believed in money as she believed in nothing else. They all did. It was the thing that had been draining noisily from the farm for a decade now, for Sarah's entire life, and Rye knew that she hungered after it like a pirate. The whole thing was ugly, and he didn't like to see it. His sister was 11, pigeon-toed, proficient at dirtying clothes within seconds of donning them, and blessed with cerulean eyes and the downy blonde crown of an angel. She was the kind of kid who stared up at the sky in hopes of seeing something from storybooks. It troubled Rye that Sarah's dreamy guilelessness was boned with the sharp and cornered calculations of a handful of grimy coins. Stiff mufflers of August heat wrapped around their necks, and bleak exhales of dust bloated about their ankles as they scuffed their toes through the dirt of the McCafferty 40. This field and the five others bordering the farm had once commanded dizzying ranks of corn, soybean, hay, wheat, oat, and sorghum. Countless times in the past, Rye had put his hands to the dirt and felt for the hidden heartbeat, but it had been as futile as searching for meteor trails in broad daylight. Only his father had ever had the ability to speak to the land. Marvin Burke was a man whose shadow still chilled the entire county. Merchants and neighbors alike had brandished a distrust of the man of the Wolverine Manor, the obliterating handshake, the features that never stopped moving, pulsing veins, twitching mustache, a rubber grin that delivered the nonstop soliloquies. Marvin Burke talked too much. He was too tall, too thin. His muscles were too rangy. His head was shaved down to a gleam they found unnatural. They suspected the man was a horror, and they were right. Rye had known that what his father did in the privacy of their home was unspeakable, but how could he or anyone else dare to stop him when Marvin Burke was the one who kept the sun rising and falling, kept winters from falling too harshly, kept late spring frosts from shriveling the delicate yellow buds peeking through the soil? Rye had visceral memories of sitting beside his father in the combine cab, their stoic cattle dog, Sniggity, further crowding the quarters. His father would push back his thick square glasses and orate so enthusiastically that the wide gap between his two front teeth appeared to melt into the black mustache and form a huge open hole in the center of his face.